Well, it's a new year for the Think programs, and last week we talked about Think Sustainability back for 2017. It's a totally different topic right now. I've got Ellen Leibetter in, and we're talking fascinatingly, and one of my favourites, Think Digital Futures.
I know, I'm actually a little bit scared, Nick.
No.
Like, I get to Think Digital Futures, I get to play the expert on it, but I think you're more expert than me when it comes to this area.
It's just a passionate area for me. I'm no expert at all. Nice shake-up with the Think team. This is exciting.
Yay.
For you to be moving around a bit.
Well, I decided I've been doing Think Health for 2 years, so time to do something different.
Yo, you do know a lot about midwifery after all that time.
Pretty much an expert. Now I'm going to learn how to become an engineer.
Fantastic. What's happening with digital futures this year?
This year or this week?
Oh, this week. Why not?
Let's go with this week. I haven't quite got to this year. This week, we're talking about hacking implanted medical devices.
Wow.
So this is, it's been around for a couple of years. So the first pacemaker was actually shown it could be hacked in 2008. So it's not exactly a new threat.
It was a major plot point in an HBO TV series.
Homeland?
In fact, it was
that
indeed.
That does make it into the episode. So pacemakers, I spoke to a guy who hacked his own insulin pump.
Wow.
So
what?
He did that in 2011. So he was at a tech conference. So he's a computer engineer. He's at a tech conference with his mate in the early 2000s. And at this conference, there's a presentation on hacking parking meters. And his friend turned to him and said, "Hey, wouldn't it be funny if you could hack your insulin pump?" And this guy, kind of sat on it for a few years. And then a couple of years later, he was like, "Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot." And so we've got a grab to play for you about how his insulin pump currently works, and then I'm going to explain to you what he did to hack it.
Okay, 1 second. Here it goes.
Basically, the way it works is the remote says, "I want you to give 3 units of insulin to whatever you're connected to." And the insulin pump goes, "Okay, I'll give 1 unit right now." And then the remote goes, "Great, good job, give another unit." You know, there's a little back and forth communication there until the command is completely executed.
Okay.
So this guy's name's Jay Radcliffe, and he's a type 1 diabetic. So he's got an insulin pump to regulate his blood sugar. Not all insulin pumps are connected remotely. It happened to have a remote control because sometimes I don't want to wear it on my abdomen because it sticks out in a suit. Sometimes I like to have it in my shoe. And so then I have a remote. So when I'm having hors d'oeuvres in an event, I can adjust the levels.
It's the most engineer thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know. It's very funny. And my partner's actually a type 1 diabetic, doesn't have an insulin pump, he's all manual. So he kind of found this guy's story pretty shocking, as you can imagine. And so what Jay did, he's a licensed ham radio hobbyist.
Of course.
So he used his ham radio to look at the signals that the remote was sending to the insulin pump, did some magical stuff and worked out the ones and zeros in the program that they were making. So as you just heard, he was saying, remote sends control to insulin pump, insulin pump does it, and then it says, "Great, do it again, do it again." So Jay wrote this program to pretend to be the remote control, and the insulin pump said, "Oh, okay, yeah, no worries. I meant to take a command from you. I'm going to give you insulin.
I'm going to blast insulin like it's going out of style."
Exactly. And he ended up putting 150 units of insulin into his pump. 150. And
that would kill anyone.
That would kill anyone, especially a diabetic.
Yeah,
if your blood sugar goes that high, your body literally just shuts down. And
That's incredible.
You can kill someone by doing it. He did it all while the pump was offline.
It wasn't connected
to him. Otherwise, he would not be here. So this was in 2011. I think he's the first patient to actually give it a shot.
So to speak.
Yes. And he presented it at a conference. And a lot of people got really terrified because this is the first time he demonstrated that it was possible. And a lot of people have kind of said, now you've handed over the keys to all these hackers to be able to do this. But in saying that, it's 2011, the first pacemaker 2008, hasn't been that much of a risk.
It really hasn't. And more importantly, I got to say, if he's figured it out, so is someone else.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and I think it just goes to show that we need to have a bit more security around these devices.
Absolutely.
And we do need to hack them to see where the points are that...
That's what white hat hacking is all about.
Exactly, exactly. The thing is that's kind of new here in Australia is with pacemakers and defibrillators and cardiac monitors all being implanted in us. Mm-hmm. So they have all been set up remotely in the last 12 months. It's kind of a pretty new thing in Australia to have your pacemaker remotely monitored. It's really, really great for patients most of the time because you would have to go and see your doctor every 12 months if you had one of these devices to check it was still working. And 90% of the time, no adjustments. It was running smoothly. So, you know, if you've got to travel 10, 12 hours to go and see your doctor.
It's a pain in the bum.
It's a real pain in the bum. But now they can do it remotely. Your doctor gets all these, your poor doctor gets all these notifications that things are running smoothly or maybe something's not going too well. Actually, I should caveat that by saying maybe it's not your doctor who is the one doing the monitoring of the devices.
Can we just say a medical technician?
Yes. So this is the next big problem is in Australia, we have the companies who make the devices are the ones that are doing the monitoring.
Okay.
So it's not the doctor, it's the companies. And the way Medicare benefits is set up, the company actually gets like a couple of $1,000 to monitor your device. Your doctor only gets $50 or $100 depending on the device.
Okay.
So there's a real there's an incentive for companies to do the monitoring, which is fine. Companies do, like probably have a bit more time to do that if they're running a dedicated business to
it. Customer service, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the free market. There's a couple of companies you can choose from. But the issue is the legality. So if something goes wrong with that pacemaker and you're the patient, who do you sue? Are you suing the company or the doctor? So this is a cardiologist from Newcastle talking about this problem.
All right.
And so the companies have actually been, to answer your question directly, very keen to offload all of the responsibility to the doctor. And so every company now, when starting remote monitoring, gets the patient to sign a disclaimer saying that the doctor's responsible for the remote monitoring. And so that puts a huge burden on us because the guidelines say everyone should be remote monitored. The companies say that we're responsible for remote monitoring and we can't personally keep up.
What a mess.
Thousands of people in Australia have these devices. So, yeah, it's going to hit the courts and it's going to be pretty bloody interesting.
You are not putting the stops on when it comes to Think Digital Futures this year, are you? You're going straight for the jugular. Hey, when's it on? When can people catch it?
Sundays at 10:30, or you can even catch it tonight at 6:30 after The Wire.
Wonderful stuff. Ellen, we will talk more Think programming this time next week.
Thanks, Nick.